Good morning, Joe.
Hey there, shirtless, the shirtless wonder. Is this what we're going with every week?
Well, here, you know why we're shirtless is because it's, what is it? Let me look at my, it's 6:30 a.m. my time right now because I had to get up for you. You had something to do. I just rolled out of bed and, you know, I'm not wearing a shirt. So you should actually be thanking me and grateful that I'm here for you right now.
Does this mean that you're wearing skin-colored Nikes right now so that because they match?
I've got nothing on foot, but I had an interesting dream last night. You want to hear it?
Does anybody... you're going to call me curmudgeonly again, but does anybody ever get off on other people's dreams? Nobody cares, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got off in this dream. Do you want to hear it?
No, but go ahead. My wife does this every day. You can't believe the dream I had. I'm like, you're right. I can't believe it.
This was a beautiful dream. Okay.
Yeah.
I was riding a white horse bareback.
This is such bullshit.
Swear to God. And this is a recurring dream. I've had this dream multiple times.
Do you want to have it again? Don't say it.
I don't care. I don't care. I want to say it because it felt amazing. It was short, so this isn't a long story. I'm riding a white horse bareback on this mesa, and it's a full moon, so it's like that moonlit, and I just am feeling extremely free. Now, I am clothed. I'm not like naked on the horse, but after about, I don't know, 30 seconds of riding, this horse just sort of takes off, and now I'm flying on the white horse. And I look down and I can see everything below me and I pass through these clouds and I am just free, just flying through the air on this horse. And it felt really amazing. And that was the extent of the dream, but it was special for me.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury,
yeah.
I rest my case.
What do you mean? How would you?
Nobody cares about it. Nobody. That was horrible.
It had
no ending. There was
It's my truth. It's my truth. It's what's in. It's my subconscious. I'm trying to reveal my subconscious. Now, care to analyze it?
Yeah, I'll analyze it.
You're a fucking analyst, aren't you?
You were stoned as hell when you went to sleep, and you probably did. You probably had this dream right out of the gate, and then the rest of the night you were drooling on Aaron's hair.
That's it. You can't analyze me riding bareback on a white horse that actually takes off into the clouds. I mean, you know who I am. Is there any sort of profound analysis that you can give me?
You're shedding your former life, your former slovenly look, mm-hmm. and you're cleaning your act up. You're on your athletic greens. You're feeling better about your body. You got a haircut finally, post quarantine.
You should just work in all the sponsors. You have a Vincero watch on. You just used a Roman wipe.
Right. You just signed yourself up for insurance.
Policy genius.
You know that if you crash that now Pegasus, first it was a horse, it's a Pegasus.
Yeah, it's got wings.
If that thing crashes into somebody's chimney or Maserati, mm-hmm. you're covered thanks to Policy Genius.
Oh, yes, this is true. And then when I'm recovering, I can have a drink works, you know, so I can just have a nice cocktail or something.
Right, while you wait for the insurance adjuster to show up.
Thank you. Thanks for that job. I'm going to write that down once this podcast is done. So we recorded this, I don't know, a few weeks ago or so. I can't even remember. My man Adam Sandler, one of my very good friends, he bought my childhood home from my parents, so I get to still be a part of my childhood thanks to him.
So, yeah, we recorded the episode with Adam so long ago. I think he's released 4 more movies since we talked to him.
Yes,
he's like Stephen King in the literary world. If you He gets into a cab. He goes 10 blocks. He gets out of a cab, and he's produced another movie somehow.
Yeah. He's prolific.
And he's great, and he's so genuine. I think he's just somebody that when you see him on screen or when you know he's behind something, it just feels authentic. It doesn't feel forced. He's just kind of being himself.
Yeah, he is.
I love his stuff.
Me too. And, you know, he's obviously multi-talented. He can be Waterboy and then go play this part in Punch Drunk Love and or even Uncut Gems. The guy can act. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's a great actor. And he's just so versatile. He can do whatever the fuck he wants.
I just don't think he gets the credit for being the actor that
I don't
he
think
actually
he needs
is.
It. He doesn't even need it. He's happy. The guy's a lot of money, good family, happy dude, you know.
Really close with his wife and his girls.
Yeah, and what I loved about this this conversation we had was, you know, everyone knows who Sandler is as a comedian. Even in his press interviews, he's funny. He has not really talked much about his dad, what he meant to him, how painful it was when his dad passed away, and the influence that his father had on him. And we got into that shit. And it was really fun for me, someone who has known him for a while, to hear him open up about that stuff.
On top of that, how he is as a dad and how protective he is and how with his girls and how it just comes through in the episode. And we'll cut this off so we can get to it here soon. Just there's no pretense. It's not sometimes I feel like you see people trying to act like they're a great dad. In Adam's case, after this episode and the way he talks about his girls, you'll just know he's a great dad. He's not trying to act any way. He's a protective, loving dad, and that you know makes me like him even more when I see him on screen.
That's right. So enjoy Adam Sandler in all of his glory.
Good to see you. Good to see you, Ali. Thanks for having me,
dude. Thank you, brother. This is a treat for Joe, especially.
Yeah, Joe. Good deal, huh?
It is. My God. You and I have shaken hands before, but we've never spent any time together, although I feel like I know you well as I've watched you age before me on my movie screen, and I've aged before you on your sports TV screen, so we got that in common.
Have you ever, you know, been listening to a Yankee game and been like, fucking Joe Buck?
Always felt like Joe Buck had was pulling for the Yankees. He knew it was good for the world.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury,
that's the first.
I rest my case. Every Yankee fan's like, why do you hate the Yankees? Come on. I'm like, why would I hate? Are you kidding me? Why would I hate the Yankees?
It's going to only help Joe Buck if the Yankees win this thing.
That's right. You're right. I've won Emmys thanks to the Yankees.
I've been watching a little bit of the Korean baseball. It's been fun.
Oh, is the Korean Baseball League up and running?
Oh, yeah.
It is, yeah. And the umps are wearing masks and stuff, and it's you're getting to know them a little bit, and there's great players over there. It's like watching a game. No one's in the stands, though, right? It's
no one's except they have, like, cardboard cutouts.
Right, yeah.
Which is a little odd, but at least it kind of looks normal. And I got some headlines a couple of weeks ago when I said every network's going to look to put audio, like some sort of fake crowd noise under us while we're doing the game. They're going to put virtual fans in the stands if they can, if it looks okay. Because if you're at home and it's flat on the broadcast or you look at the stadium and there's nobody there, it's going to look like practice. I mean, it's just going to be... It's going to be weird. So you got to try to fluff it up a little bit.
I think I heard somebody talk about announcing the games now that they'd be nervous that the players can hear them because no one's there. It's funny.
Yeah. I don't want to call a home run too loud. The pitcher's be pissed off at me that he'd hear me. But yeah, that is a factor. And like Oliver and I have talked about, I try to use the crowd as much as I can. So if that's not there, you're going to feel the need to talk like for three straight hours because there's going to be no other noise, which is going to be terrible.
Yeah, that is a slow game to not have any noise.
Oh my God.
Which only makes Vince Scully that much more unbelievable at 88 doing games by himself, crowd or no crowd. Like this, sometimes it's sitting there for 4.5 hours.
Yeah, man. That's good.
Did you guys watch the Tiger Phil thing?
No, I just saw
it was good.
It was good, huh?
I liked it. Did you watch it, Joe?
I did. I loved it. It was different than the one they did the week before.
It was fun.
It was fun, and Peyton Manning had a blast. He may or may not have taken advantage of the fact that he, unlike Brady, is not scared of a cup of vodka, from what I hear from friends that I know in the business. So I think he had a little swing juice going, and Brady looked nervous, which when you're out of your element and you're used to being the best
at
what you do, man.
Oh, that's the worst. I did only one of those tournaments like 15 years ago. Ollie, you must love doing those tournaments, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
You shock everybody how great you are.
I loved it, dude. My first tournament ever, one of those pro-ams, was in Palm Desert. It was at the Bob Hope. And Arnie Palmer was the host at the time. And on the first tee, he was sitting watching everyone tee off. Uh-huh. Now, most players are right-handed, so their back is to Arnie. They don't have to look him right in the fucking eyes while they're taking the club back. I'm a lefty, so I am 6 feet from him, and he's like staring right at me, right down the barrel. I'm like, oh my God, like this is crazy right now. I mean, it was the most nervous tee shot I think I've ever had. Oh, I hit a good one. I hit a great one. So much so that the kid who keeps the score or whatever, you know, he runs up to me in the middle of the fairway once we're down. He goes, I thought you'd like to know that. Once you hit the ball and walked off, Arnie said, that kid's got a great swing.
Oh, my God. That's nice.
Good God.
You play, Joe? You play also?
I do. That's really how Oliver and I know each other, is through golf events. And then I bring him down to Mexico every year to El Dorado and Cabo. We play in a member guest, and the first time we ever played together and really hung out was at that one out in Tahoe, Oliver, when I got to know you better. And
Kevin Nealon?
Yeah, Kevin's there.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you know, Charles Barkley holds court, and, you know, is up all night and having a blast. So it brought us together. I love the hangout of it as much as I love actually playing golf.
The best, man. I remember I went to one. I haven't done it in so long because I don't play that much. I haven't played in the last 10 years at all. Maybe.
Yeah, you used to, and then you just gave it up.
I used to be able to. I'd go out with you, but you were incredible. I was okay at best, but I went to one tournament with all athletes out at Sherman. Sherman? Lake Sherwood?
Yeah.
I did a tournament there, and it was all football players. And all basketball players, and they were all older guys. But I remember just 90% of the guys had the toughest time walking from the old football players.
Oh,
it was so shot, man. It was.
Yeah, it looks like Revolutionary War people coming back from the front lines. Just hand somebody a fife and a drum and they're walking down the fairway like with one replaced hip after another.
Man.
So to give everyone a little bit of backstory, because no one knows this, but Sandler and I have known each other for a long time now. Our wives actually became best friends when they were modeling in Miami.
Yeah.
Which we won't get into that whole world because who knows what the hell they were doing back then.
We ignore that part of their life.
Yeah, that doesn't exist. You know? Anytime the word even when I hear the word Miami, just even the word, I get like a little nauseous.
It's good to know you have that gene, Ollie. I didn't know that you really gave a shit about that stuff.
He's good at protecting those feelings. He just blocks that.
Yeah, he does. I get jealous. Like in the beginning of all my relationships, I'm jealous as fuck. Like I get a little crazy. And then I ease into sort of normalcy. But in the beginning,
if you're not jealous, you don't care, right?
I need specifics, though. I need, who were you with? What happened? How big was his dick? Why were you with this guy? Where were his hands? I need to know everything. Otherwise, I can't sort of sleep, because I don't want to run into some dude later on and wonder. You know what I mean? I don't want that.
I do want that. I want to just ignore anything. But I'll tell you, my biggest difference in getting older in what I'm jealous of, back to what that all the stuff you said was early part of my jealous brain. Now the stuff I get jealous of is when some normal guy doesn't react crazy to a situation, and your wife just goes, "That was nice. That man stayed calm." And you're just like, "Oh, you like that? You like the guy who stayed calm?" You know, I don't even think of sex anymore. I'm just like, he handled it, and I don't handle things because I can't. Oh, okay, I got it.
Isn't that nice how that man fixed our refrigerator and you couldn't do it?
So then anyway, so that's how I met Sandler. And then he actually ended up buying my childhood home.
Oh, my God, which, yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And I think my bedroom is now Jackie's office.
Your bedroom's an office. Sonny, my daughter's growing up in Kate's room. And
yeah.
But Sadie, I think, lives. Didn't you used to stay in that room, too, that Sadie?
No. Yeah. When I was, well, when I, you know, I didn't leave mom's home until I was 24.
Exactly.
So.
When I met you, you were still sleeping in Sadie's room, by the way.
I was. Yeah. it was funny, man. Like,
yeah, just so you know, Adam, those aren't ghosts. That's actually Oliver still sleeping up in his room when he gets kicked out by Aaron. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That happened. No, but Oliver grew up in a good house. I got to say, that was a nice upbringing. Nice. We took Oliver's little handball court. What was that, a little mini tennis court?
Yeah. The little paddle tennis court.
Turned that into a half court basketball. That's like that. And we took the sacred cow away. Maybe your mother just took that. I don't even
know. No, she did. She just took it. That was not part of the deal.
I thought I was getting the cow.
You don't get the cow, dude.
There was a cow involved in the transaction, potentially. You grew up with a sacred cow, Oliver?
Yeah.
What was that cow?
It was like this ceramic cow that we've had in the family since I can even remember. And, you know, I think it's still at their new house.
Their new house.
Yeah, it's at their new house.
That's really funny. I've been to the new house. I swam in their pool in the new house.
Yeah.
They hid the cow that day because they know it was part of the deal. Right.
Totally. This breach of contract.
By the way, when I first looked at the house, I first saw the house at a party. Oliver had a giant party, and that's where it happened. We were looking for houses, and I was with Jackie in the kitchen sitting there, and she kept going, "This is what we're looking for, this kind of house." And I was like, "Yeah, this is awesome." And she's like, "No, this is..." And this, and pointing at everything. And then it got done. Like, well, your mom and Jackie talked. But I don't know.
There's nothing like getting ripped off in a deal where you buy something that wasn't for sale.
That's right. Was it not for sale at the time? Oliver, I don't remember. I think that created the sale.
That's how much you love Jackie. When she's like, no, I mean literally this house. Not kind of this house, literally this house.
What about that party? Oliver's parties were giant back then.
Oh, they were huge. They crazy.
Fill up the street. That was, I think, one of the biggest parties I've ever been to. And then also, when I went back to see the house another time, I go, I can't just drop all the cash just for a party night. I got to see this house one more time. And I remember going in, and Kurt was there. Just Kurt. And he was sitting in his office, and he was kind of just relaxing and sitting back. And he's like, oh, hey, yeah, let me show you. And he just showed me a couple of rooms. And then he goes, you can check it out after a little while. And I remember he just sat and watched ESPN or something. Walking around the house. He's like, he was very casual about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you guys became neighbors. You were funny-ass neighbors, you and Kurt, sort of across the street from each other.
Amazing. Amazing. I always felt protected when Kurt was across the street. I just know, he would literally. I remember your brothers caught some guy looking in my yard.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
Like that. I came, both your brothers grabbed a guy or something. Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yep, yep. Wyatt and like Boston.
Yes,
I think.
Yes. I was very protected at the time. Then you guys move out the street, and I feel like at any time I can get killed without Kurt around.
So happy you're doing this, Sandler, because, you know, it is about being a dad and being a son. And I know how much you loved your dad. And I know that being a father is your number one priority to your girls.
Yes.
And you know, so you grew up in, you were born in New Hampshire and grew up in New York?
No. I was born in New York.
Okay.
There's Jackie, by the way. Say hi. We were talking about
Jackie.
Miami.
And Joe Buck.
Miami.
And Sonny, what are you doing? I got to talk. Can't listen.
Son,
you can't listen. Get out of here.
Oh, dude, I just saw Jackie in Spades movie like two nights ago.
It's so good. Movie is so good, and Jackie's great.
Jackie's
in it,
but so great. She's so pretty. She looks beautiful.
Thank you for saying that, and that's good. She's smiling right now. The Barracuda.
Good.
She's very happy. But
Barracuda.
I'm glad you like that movie. Good. And then being a father and growing up, I'll tell you my story. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. And then my father, when I was five, and I'm one of four kids, when I was five, he got a job in New Hampshire. So we moved to New Hampshire. And then I grew up there. And then after that, and most of my family stayed in New York, like relatives and grandparents and everything. And so we kind of went back and forth to New York and New Hampshire the whole time.
What did your dad do for a living? I don't even know.
He was electrical engineer, and then he got a job in New Hampshire as an electrical engineer for a while. And then he got into electrical contracting. He ultimately, when I was in high school, he got a company, electrical contracting company, that used to put in alarms and wire houses and wire hotels and all that kind of stuff. Very was like he, a real guy, like a real man, knew how to do stuff. He didn't pass that along to me. He actually like, I used to say to him, because I'd see him be cool with that, and I'd watch like Fonzie, you know, be a mechanic and stuff, and I was like, I want to be like the Fonz. So I'd say to my dad, can you teach me what's under the hood? And he'd be like, absolutely, Saturday morning we'll go do it. And then literally get up like 7:30 in the morning, go to the driveway, pop a hood. He'd say like two, three things. I'd start tuning out. He'd be like, you don't really want to know this. I'd be like, I do, but you know, I got baseball later. He'd be like, just get out of here. Just move.
Was it 9-to-5 stuff? Like, was he there like for dinner or you had that work, you know?
Yeah. When we first moved to New Hampshire, and he worked at a company. Say hi, guys. Say hi to Ollie.
What's up, son? What's up, girls?
All right, and that's Joe. Say hi to Joe.
Hi, girls.
Okay, so when we first moved to New Hampshire, my father worked for a company, and he really into coaching all our teams. He coached baseball and basketball and that kind of stuff. So he used to try to. He was at every practice, and he'd always get there on time, and he was all about that stuff with us. And I had two sisters, and he was all about studying with them and helping out and being part of their lives. So yes, he even when he didn't have any control of his job, he would like take off lunch and shoot home and that kind of stuff. Mm. He was all about the family, and he's really was had no friends. My mother would try to be social and stuff, and he would be like, I don't want to, you know, he'd rather be home with the kids. He was that kind of guy.
Wow.
And so yeah, he was around all the time. When we would go on vacations, we would go to like a Howard Johnson's or something and just be the six of us in one room and you'd sleep on cots and stuff, and he never went away with other families. So I like grew up like that.
Wow.
That kind of guy. And so I started feeling guilty when I was making a little bit of money, and I would call my dad and say, I'm thinking of going to Mexico or something. If some guys are going, he'd be like, oh, okay. And then I'd be like, oh, my father would never do this. He would never just run away. If he had a shot, he would run home and be with his family. So it always in my head was like, what am I doing? I better go to New Hampshire instead of going to Mexico. I was always a little jumpy about doing it.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you literally have taken that from your dad. I mean, you bring your family everywhere you go.
I know, man.
You know?
I know.
You are just a unit, a solid unit.
But what a gift, Adam. I mean, yeah. when you get to a certain age and you realize that not everybody else grew up that way, and you start looking around, you're like, my God, my dad has been here. He has that pull back to our family. And it feels like in this day and age, that's even more rare. But for somebody like me, my dad was constantly going. And I used to just savor every minute I got with him, but it was a totally, and I didn't feel like he didn't want to be there, but he was always working in other cities and doing all that other stuff.
Right.
But what a gift, and thank God that you had that, and you now provide that for your girls and your wife.
I'd say thank you, man. And you're right. Your dad, that was his gig. He had to go on the road. He had to do his thing. Did you go on the road with him ever? Like
I did. I mean, he took me, my story, and this podcast isn't about me, but I came along at a time when my dad was married with six kids and met my mom, who was coming through St. Louis in a theater production. They met, I came into the world not long thereafter, and then he started up kind of his marriage with my mom. And I think there was a lot of guilt there for him with the other kids.
Sure.
By the time I was 12 years old, I had been in every National League city. He wanted me to travel with him. So I got to go on a lot of those trips.
Right.
But I did miss a lot of time. And then later on, the end of the story is he and I were broadcast partners with the Cardinals, and I got a lot of that time back on the team bus, on the team charter,
Amazing. Doing
that kind of stuff. But I find it just inspiring for any dad out there to hear Adam Sandler say that you were aware that your dad, when he had a moment, was running home, not running out to do other stuff. And like Ollie just said, you do the same thing. I know you have your girls involved in projects, and your wife's a big part of The Wrong Missy and other stuff. Yeah. So good on you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, like Oliver, I remember you would tell me your parents, you grew up on sets too. Your parents would bring you if they had a gig out of town, they'd take you with it. It's just, you're just happier. You love your kids so much.
Yeah.
You don't want to be away from them. You don't want them to, you know, like you go away for a week or something, it's okay. You know, they miss you. Right. You miss them. But when it starts being a lot of time, it shakes it up too much.
Did your dad sacrifice a lot for the kids, or was he pretty, was it pretty much, there was, it's he like was a, just on a.
You know, I never, it was a natural thing for him. My dad wasn't a drinker. He used to eat, you know, like that was his big thing with the kids. Like he'd say, hey, don't tell your mom, but let's stop for some McNuggets, you know, and then we'd eat. And then when he'd be driving home, he'd be like, your mom doesn't need to know about this because she's preparing lunch for us. And then we'd get home and I'd be like, didn't we just eat? And he'd be like, you know, chowing down another meal. But I don't know if it was a sacrifice. He just like naturally wanted to hang with us. When my father passed away, though, I remember the funeral was really like a lot of nice people in Manchester, our hometown, loved my dad, even though he wasn't like running around doing stuff. He just was part of the Little League and part of the city. So everybody liked him as a guy. And so at the funeral, I had a few. Oh, my dad was a great golfer.
Oh, that's right.
My dad was really great at golfing. So he had some golfing buddies that at the funeral came up to me and told me, I remember when your father did this, and that was the only time I went, my dad, holy shit. I didn't know he ever did. I don't remember anything particular right now, but I was like a dad I didn't really know. You find that at funerals. So you hear shit about your dad. You're like, right. I didn't need to know that one.
Right. Totally.
Yeah, I've heard some stories too from some people. I'm like, you know, did that detail need to be thrown in there?
No, sure.
I would have been good without knowing that one thing you just told me.
That's what I remember. I was in the driveway with my dad, and he had this 2-tone color Cadillac, dark green on the top and a light green on the bottom. And I fucking loved that car. It was the coolest thing. And we got into the driveway. We were cruising around. We were tight. Me and my dad was really like, I would lay, my dad would had a bed and the TV over there, you know, where my mom would sleep. It was the afternoon. My father was hanging out in the bed. I would lay down with my mom and watch the TV with him and shoot the shit with him. And I remember I said, were you like this with your dad? And he goes, it was a different time, man. We didn't get that tight. He loved me, but it wasn't like this. And and so we were really just shot the shit, and I was close, and I always wanted him to love everything, get the approval about every move I made, even though I was kind of a fucking big mouth and I got into trouble and stuff. I didn't do everything right, but I ultimately wanted him to like what I was doing. But not really connected to what I just said, but I remember we were in that fucking Cadillac. We're sitting there. We're close. And I, for no reason, I said, were you ever with anybody before Mom? And he goes, you mean romantically? And in my head, I'm like, oh, no. Oh, he's going to tell me something. So
here it comes.
Here it comes. And I said, yeah, yeah. And then he looks at me. He goes, you know, there was before your mother. There was a time where it was called practice. I was practicing, but I said, "What do you mean practicing?" He goes, "You know, I practiced with a couple of women before." I go, "You did?" And I was 15, and I was such a little baby. I started screaming, "Why?" And I can't. And I left the car and I ran into the house and I was hugging my mother like, "That's sick, man."
Hey, actually, that brings up a question. Actually, like, because you have girls,
yes,
they're getting to an age, you know, where it's, you know, you got to talk about sex and all that crazy shit. Like, how do you deal with that with girls? I have Rio, my little one. We're not there yet.
Right.
With the boys, it's kind of easier. It's like, yeah, you got your little dick, and you know, yeah, it goes places. Like, what do you do? Or does Jackie handle that? How do you deal with that?
I think I got to start handling it a little better, right? As they were growing up, I always played like, hey, no guy, you nothing. I don't want you. Don't worry about that. I'm not, anybody hurts, says one thing, I'll knock them out. That kind of shit.
And, yeah.
Lately, Jackie's been kind of telling me like, you want them to feel good about a guy one day, and like, you want to be friends with this guy. You don't want to say you gotta hate everybody, and I am changing a little bit. And like, when I talk about their futures and this make-believe future, I talked about, you know, you just want a nice guy who's, mm-hmm. who you can count on, is gonna like look out for you, and blah blah blah. I'm getting into that world. I'm less being like, fuck everybody. You don't need that shit. You only need me. Now I'm like, hey, I'm going to fucking die one day. I want to make sure they win somebody decent.
Totally. Totally.
But let me give you the cliff notes, because I'm a step ahead of you. You and I are about the same age, but I've got daughters that are 23 and 20, and they're with serious boyfriends who I love. We all love. And what you're putting in with your girls, I guarantee your girls think of you more as their buddy than they do their dad. And that's kind of what you were leading to with your own dad. Like, you were more friends. I looked at my dad like he was my best friend, not my dad, like the guy who came home and poured a stiff drink, and then if I got out of line, he gave me a whack. It was, and so you'll get all that back, and that openness is golden, and then they'll start finding men that remind them of you.
Yeah, but Joe, but did you handle the specifics of womanhood, or did you leave that up to their mother? You know what I mean?
Left that up to their mom. I mean, I can't. I can't talk to them about, you know, having a period every month. I have no idea. So that I just remember that kind of came and went, and all of a sudden they knew. But like you and I have talked about, it with so much that's out there, I think it's almost naive to think that they're not going to have some idea of how the basic anatomy and the whole equation works. It's more about being there emotionally. And like Jackie said, let them know that whatever they – whoever and whatever they're bringing home, question-wise, it's an open forum to ask whatever, and that's what they'll do with friends, which is what you and your wife are to them, I imagine.
Yeah, man, that's good. That's good. I appreciate that.
You know, it's funny, Adam, touching on something you said earlier, you know, when you were lying with your dad, and you're like, did your dad do this with you? You know, it's a touching story, and I relate to that because, you know, as you know, my real dad wasn't there for me. You know, I didn't get to have that sort of physical touch, you know, and I'm super physical with my boys, and I lay in bed with them and cuddle them, and I will be lying next to them, and I won't say it out loud, but I'm thinking, man, they're so lucky. They're so lucky because I never had that. You know what I mean? Like, I never had a dad who would just lay down with me and cuddle me till I went to sleep. You know, and I'm like, God, man, they're such lucky kids.
That's
you know,
amazing.
To sort of
ever let them know that. That's just in part of your.
Yeah. No, I'm not like, you lucky fucks.
Oh, no.
You know how lucky you are.
Right.
My dad never touched me.
He didn't care. Yeah, no. I know what you mean, man. I'm like beyond my dad with staring at my kids and loving.
Yeah.
Like, I'm psychotic with like my two kids are running around. There's 30 kids around. I'm still just staring at my two kids like, oh, she tripped. I think she tripped right there. And everyone's like, who tripped? I'm like, she tripped. That's all you need. I stare like an idiot too much. I'm so in love with them. But
was your dad did he discipline you guys?
Yeah. But by the way, Joe, my father did crack me a few times. There's no doubt about that. He didn't need the stiff drink. That's the sad part. He was sober when he was like, but we were so tight, and he was such the king of the family that. None of that shit mattered. There were heated, crazy moments, and I look at those moments and say, Jesus Christ, I wish I didn't upset my father so much, because I was a fucking big mouth and I didn't say dumb shit, and I was a punk. Because when I walk down outside, I see a 15-year-old kid, I see him being a wise guy. My instinct at my age is like, this fucking asshole kid being a wise ass. But then I go to the second part, I go, actually, I think I was that fucking dick. I was being like that. And that's why my father said, get the fuck over here a few times to me, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's those moments, though, that you almost need that in a way where you, like, that's the way I was disciplined by my parents. I didn't get in trouble for the big things where it's like, look, you know what you did wrong. Right. You shot out windows with your BB gun. All right. You're a fucking idiot. Yeah, but there's no need to punish you because we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt to know that you're an asshole.
Wow.
But it's the little things. It's the little things where I was being, you know, sort of just taking shit for granted or being a spoiled kid.
Yeah.
Those small things that I don't recognize or didn't recognize is when Kurt and Mom would just get down on me, and that's when they would get pissed, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, I know, and man, Kurt loves you. Kurt is so... I remember when I first met you, and Kurt told me how far you could drive a golf ball, and I was like, Jesus Christ, Kurt's in love with this kid, because there's no fucking way he's hitting it that long. And then I played with you, I was like, oh, shit, I didn't know he could hit 280 or whatever the fuck. You probably can hit him 300 now. I haven't played with you in a long time, but yeah.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, made me the man that I am. I mean, I'm like not really much of a man, but the little man that I am.
You have many manly things you can do.
I've got a couple manly things.
He fishes. He can put bait on a
fearless
hook.
Fearless up and take it. Yeah.
You were talking earlier, though. So I'm a dad the second time around. Now I've got 2-year-old twin boys, and it's weird to see kids, you know, become adults like I have with my girls, and now to start back over, because it doesn't matter what you have.
Yeah.
They're so fragile, and like you said, you're sitting back staring at them going, oh my God, I think she just tripped. I think she tripped. Is she okay? There's nothing that scares me more, keeps me up more at night than the inability to protect these boys from any little thing, like taking one step too far somewhere or whatever. That is a frightening feeling as a parent.
Buddy, you know what's it's so funny. Last night, I didn't sleep at all. My one daughter is 11. Sunny, and she had this weekend, she wanted to jump in the ocean, and she had she burnt herself like 2 years ago, so it was a third degree burn, so she still got to cover up from the sun with zinc and all that stuff. And she said, can you put a Band-Aid on that so you know, the sun doesn't hit it and it's protective, and it doesn't, can you get a waterproof one so it doesn't come off in the ocean? So we got her these waterproof Band-Aids, put it on her, and it was starting to hurt her, and we couldn't get it off, right, because it's waterproof, so it's so sticky. And so going to sleep at night, she's like, I'm scared. I got to get this off. And my wife tried olive oil, and it wasn't working. And just because I'm so nuts over this kid, I couldn't sleep all night long. I was like, we got to do that tomorrow morning. It's going to hurt her. And I was looking online all the tricks to get a Band-Aid off and extra sticky, and I didn't sleep, and so I'm a mess. But when I woke up this morning, went to CVS, when it opened up, got baby oil, was squirting on her, and then Jackie and Sonny got it done. I literally had to leave the room every time she was going, ah! It's like, just do it, get it done.
Yeah.
Right. And we're talking about a Band-Aid here, not like something.
I mean,
you know,
I had a Band-Aid on, I'd hear from the other room when I'd be like, ow, I'd just hear my grandmother going, rip it off! Enough already! I'd be like, what the hell is with her, man? It's her.
Oh, it's so true. I'm the same way. I have so much stress over my kids' sort of well-being. And I have to try to put it out of my head, because it can spiral me, you know. Wilder has, my tummy hurts, right? I immediately go to, oh my God, you have stomach cancer, and I got to take you to the hospital.
All right.
You know, but I know he probably just has to fart or whatever, but I have to stop myself from going to the extreme.
Me too. You
place.
Know why? Because I feel everybody, the three of us think, man, we're so lucky. We've got it so good. When's the shoe gonna drop?
Dude,
or wait, you know,
oh my
I
God.
Think about that all the time.
All the time. Like, it can't be this,
like,
good. Some
can't...
bad shit's got to happen.
I think about me dying now. I never thought of, like, I guess I block it out on them. I don't even think that's a possibility, but I do, when I get something fucked up, my head's dizzy all of a sudden, I'm like, oh no, we can't do this right now. I can't die. Because I fucking lived in fear of my dad dying all the time. And then when it happened, holy shit, it's so upsetting.
I remember getting ready for my grandfather's funeral, my mom's dad, and I was watching my dad. I was, I don't know, 13, 14, watching my dad comb his hair. And he used to love when he would comb his hair down and he would try to find the right hair to start the part to go over to the side. I was fascinated by that as a little kid. And here I am, Oliver, talking about hair yet again, but different part of it. And he looked at me and he said, I know what you're thinking about. You're thinking about what it's going to be like when I die.
Wow.
And I was. And he nailed it. And then cut to him passing away, and I basically had to be the MC of his funeral.
Wow.
And I don't know that I ever got a chance really to mourn that whole thing, but it's funny you just said that, because I had written down on my little notes that I made to talk to you about death, because I think at some point we all start thinking about it a little bit more. I'm 51, you're 53, Ollie's whatever the hell you are, but it does
28. But
it does enter in more than it ever has.
Totally.
And it's,
I want to just pick up on Sandler too, because I'm the same way. Like, I'm afraid of me dying, because what the hell will my kids do if I'm not here? Like, I live with that fear for sure. That is so real. Sorry to interrupt you, Joe. I had to get that out.
No, that, but, I mean, that's basically it.
Yeah.
At some point, you start thinking about it. I thought about it as a kid, worried about it for my own dad, and now I am the dad, worried about it for what it's going to be like for my kids. And, you know, I do freak out about what's on the other side, too, but that's mm-hmm. for...
Oh, man,
part.
Yeah. I don't think about that anymore. By the way, guys, when my father was dying, it was like 3 days before he died. And I said to him, I go, best golf score, 71, right? He goes, 70. I go, oh, sorry. And so he was like, don't fucking run around and say 71 when I'm dead. That's a fucking...
Right, yeah.
70, yeah. So, but I was sitting there in his hospital room, and it was just me and Dad, and he's sitting, he's very uncomfortable because of the cancer and all that. And then I said, so do you think that, and he goes, what? I said, do you think maybe, he goes, that there's an afterlife? And I go, yeah. And he goes, how the fuck should I know? And I go, oh, sorry. And then he moved on. But it was so funny. Like, I thought I was going to get a movie moment of just like,
right, totally.
Right now is dude. He was just like, I'm fucking scared, asshole. I don't know.
Was he afraid of dying or
he dealt you know? With it. He didn't tell us that. At the very end, I think we had to do the morphine and stuff, and he knew it was coming, and he was just in agony. Mm-hmm. So he didn't talk. He didn't say anything about being scared. He just was like, I love you. I had a good life. Don't feel bad. Mm-hmm. He used to say that a lot in the last couple of years. He'd go, and my mother says it to me now. Just, I had mm-hmm. a great life. So don't mm-hmm. lose. They all knew I was, my father knew I was so in love with him.
Yeah.
He'd go, don't lose your mind. I had a great life. We got great. Now you do that for your kids and you do that
That's
for
great. Life. Do you remember a moment? Do you, because the grief, I can't even think about my parents dying. I mean, it's beyond my comprehension, but yeah. Was there a moment where you, the sun came out again? You know what I mean? Like, or was there a time where, like, oh, wait a minute, I woke up and I actually don't feel as bad as yesterday?
I don't think it was quite like that ever, but you become, I remember being unable to say the word dead. I'd mm-hmm. always, like the first year or two, would be like, he, I couldn't even say it. He passed, mm-hmm. you know, he passed away, or I didn't like saying died. I think like maybe 4 or 5 years later, I was able to laugh about him. I mean, before that, for sure, but where it was like a guarantee, people could say, you're dead, blah, blah, blah. And I'd join in the talking about my father's ups and downs. I didn't, and then him being able to snap on me and blah, blah, and I would laugh. But it was tender for a long time, right? No, mm-hmm. I don't fucking know.
I was the same way. Although being in St. Louis, which is where I still am, I would get a story a day on kind of what you said earlier about being at the funeral and hearing stories about your dad that you never knew. And they did it on the radio here in St. Louis. And I was like, my God, he did that too. And stuff that he didn't come running home and tell everybody about at the dinner table. He just did it because he knew it was the right thing to do. But I remember my dad being in intensive care and he had a trach. Which was kind of the ultimate irony. This guy with this beautiful broadcasting voice couldn't talk.
Right.
And so he had to mouth it to me. And he said, you know, I hope, because I went there every day. I went there every night. And he said, I hope me laying in here, this is all being mouthed to me. So maybe this isn't what he said, but this is what I took. That when you get to where I am right now, it's too late. Live your life. I was building a house at the time. He said, build your house, be happy, have fun, don't worry so much, because when you're laying here like me, it's too late, and what's mm-hmm. it all been for? And mm-hmm. I think about that, and I don't want to exaggerate, but I think about that once a month or something. If something comes along, I think about my dad saying that, because you're at your, probably your most real in some ways when you're about to check out. And that was basically the last thing he said to me. And it was great advice, because we could all probably use a slice of that as we, you know, worry so much in the day-to-day stuff.
Yeah. That's my dad. I always was, when I was in my 20s and just started to get into being a comedian and all that stuff and trying to be good, I was always competitive with other guys too, like a psycho, like someone was doing good, I'd be like, I fucking blah, 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 blah. I can be that. I'm better than that guy. I'm blah, blah, blah. And my father, I'd watch my dad at home see other comedians, and I'd see him laugh at other comedians. And I'd be like, this guy sucks, blah, blah, blah. He'd be like, he sucks. He's funny. I'd be like, I'm funny. He'd be like, you're both funny. What are you doing? Why are you so jumpy about everybody else? He's good. So-and-so's good. And we used to kind of get on me just like, it's not a competition. Just enjoy your ride rather than being so fucking threatened by shit. I ultimately got to that. No, maybe one or two things probably bug me now, but right, the last 10, 15 years, I was able to enjoy other people being great at shit and go, wow, I can't do that. That guy's great. Mm-hmm. Or that actress is great. I could never pull that off. And it's so much better. Whereas in my 20s, I was like, I gotta get great. I gotta be this and that. And my father, and when my father was dying at the hospital, I did 50 First Dates movie. He got sick. I was with you, Oliver.
In Hawaii. I know. I was at the hotel with you when you had to leave. I remember.
Know, man. I got the call with Oliver, and it was devastating. Yeah. We just got there that day.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But my dad, when I was at the hospital, Joe, like you were saying with your dad in the trick, my father was in bed, and I kept getting footage of edits of 51st Dates, and I would watch it, and I'd laugh, and I'd go, that's good. And my father would be, look at that, they can do it without you. They can go, why don't you go live your life a little more and stop, because I was always in the editing room and always blah, blah, blah. He goes, they can do it without you, man. You don't have to be so on top of everything. Go have a good time a little more. You're always fucking stressed out over all this stuff. And he lightened me up a little bit about not being so jumpy about every aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. God.
I know he was your biggest fan. And I know you always wanted his approval, but did he get the early stuff? Like it was so quirky. Like you, when you popped up, at least in my world,
right.
It was so different, and it was so, you know, like whether it was the stud boy or whatever you were doing, like, you know, it was a different slant on it. So it wasn't like somebody standing up telling, you know,
so,
like,
so the question is, was your dad ever like, what the fuck are you doing?
he did that more than he loved everything better, baby. That was great. You were terrific. He taped everything I did. But when I would discuss wanting to get better, he'd be like, you know, why don't you try being more yourself up there? Or he would give me little things like that, but he did think everything I did was funny.
And he supported you from the very beginning.
Like, I didn't bring him to everything because I would choke when he was there. I'd be so nervous, cursed a lot, and I felt like an asshole cursing and talking about certain things in front of my dad. So I even Saturday Night Live, I knew when my dad was there, I would choke. Get nervous that he was there, that my father realized that, and he'd be like, we don't have to come in, just go do your thing. I'll come in on Sunday after the show, we'll hang out Sunday and Monday. He'd be like, that's your job, go do your thing, don't worry about us. And he also, my mother never saw me do stand-up because I cursed so much that my father would be like, Judy, you don't want to see this.
I feel like his advice for you, be more yourself, I feel like that's your appeal. Like I was with my 80-year-old mom today, and I said, "Oh, I'm going home. We get to interview Adam Sandler on the podcast." She's like, "Oh, I love him." I feel like you're appealing to every demographic because you just. You come off so genuine. Like I don't see a lot of act. I just see a guy who looks like he's being himself, having fun, smiling, and I don't know. It's that's a hard thing to accomplish.
Thank you. And I got to a place where I was comfortable being more like who I am. I mean, I can't guarantee if you were in my house, you would see three or four different moods that you'd be like, fucking Adam Sandler's insane, man. I didn't know he was that big. But I keep that away most of the time. But yeah, when I first did stand up, I was so scared out there that I would jump into, like, I saw Bobcat Goldthwait and Kinison and Dice and all that stuff. And I was like, oh shit, I got to create some sort of persona. Stephen Wright, you know, like, I was like, let me fucking just do some weird thing, because then I'll feel less nervous, or I'll have some wave to catch that way. And then ultimately, I don't know, I just got older and calmed down and able to talk like myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, your stuff now is as authentic as it's probably ever been, your stand-up stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I mean, feel better with it now.
Yeah. Funny.
I remember you too, when I first started doing stand-up again, Oliver came to Aspen to see me at that club, and I was just starting to get going again, and it wasn't great. It was just starting to get confident again. It's fun. Yeah. I love it again. And now I had some giant tour coming before the
pandemic,
and man, I remember when it was happening a couple of months ago, I had maybe 14 dates set up and all these nice big joints, and I kept saying, like, a week or two before, I was going, this thing, man, I don't know if this is good. Well, we can make sure that no one touches you. And I was like, no one touches me. All right, we'll do that. And then I started going, but I'm asking these fucking people to sit next to each other, but they can't touch me. They're like, yeah, you know, it's not that bad. And then finally I was just like, I think we've got to fucking pull the plug on this.
It's getting
scary shit.
Where is your fear factor with all this now? Like, where are you with that?
I'm a little less bananas.
Okay.
But I was so scared when this was going on. So scared for family. So scared I have family members that have shit that they always say, well, if you have this, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. So, and I got family members with that. So I was fucking nervous wreck over it. But, it took me a while. Like when I go into a grocery store or a CVS or something, I'm maybe 5% scared now. But
yeah,
in the beginning,
yeah.
I was like, what the fuck are we eating right now for, man? Let's skip eating today. I don't want.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I had anxiety. Like, I thought I had coronavirus at least 6 times a day. I'm like, oh, I've got it. I must have it. I mean, it's just my mind just spun me out. You know.
Uh-huh.
Totally.
100%. I how about you, Joe? Were you nutty like that?
Yeah, I am. And then with the little boys here, the 2-year-olds, I was worried, even though they said it didn't affect kids, you know, you're always worried about being the exception to the rule.
Of course. Yeah, I heard
everybody.
One kid, I read in the paper, like, one kid got sick and didn't make it. And I was like, well, fucking, it's kids too. What are we talking about? You know, it was like, the percentage was where I was still, like, scared shitless. I didn't.
And how
when you went to CVS today, did you wear a mask?
Yes, I wore a mask and I wear gloves. I feel, for some reason, the fucking gloves are all relaxed.
If I'm you, that's like the silver lining in this whole thing. Like, if we weren't in a pandemic, and you went to CVS wearing a mask, you'd be an asshole. But now we're in a pandemic. And you can go to CVS, wear a mask, nobody knows it's you, and you can go get, you know.
Oh, they'll know. They still know.
Today, the mask and the sunglasses and the hat covered me up enough that I was like, oh, shit, I am just a normal person. I'm not getting any treatment at all. And so I said to I got there early, and these three pharmacists were setting up in the back and shooting the shit and ignoring me. And I said, and I'm looking for baby oil for the Band-Aid. And so I go, ladies, anybody know where the baby oil is or something? And I get hit with silence. And I was like, oh, shit, there's no Adam Sandler factor going on. So I said a little louder, I go, anybody know the baby oil, where the baby oil is? And maybe some Vaseline? And then one lady goes, aisle 14. So I go, all right, I go to 14. I'm looking around for Vaseline. I'm like, and I always, anytime someone says an aisle, I still can't fucking find it for a half hour. So I said, right. What part of 14?
Right.
They were ignoring me. And then I go, hey, ladies, give me a second over here. And they all look up. And I was like, oh, shit, maybe I'm being a little too nuts. I go, just looking for the Vaseline. Can you point me? It's over there, sir. I go, okay. And so they didn't know it was Fat Boy Slim.
Damn it. I wanted you to say you like started humming like the Hanukkah song or something. Like,
I should.
You will find me Vaseline later.
How are your girls doing in all of it, with all of it? You know, Sadie and Son.
Good. I mean, missing the human contact and having a friend sleep over. That's the you hear the most, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Are you guys having to like create shit and things to do each day in the house? Are you more active? Like, all right, let's go do this, or let's try to do this. Or...
Yeah. I'm a little nutty, or everyone else is kind of like, oh, we don't need to do that, man. But I do. We got to get outside. They said the sun's good for us.
Right.
You know, like we got to take a walk, or we got to this or that. And we walk the dog and, that kind of shit. But, I'm running out of energy to even keep that going.
Yeah, I know.
It is amazing how lethargic I've become doing nothing. Like I'm way more energetic traveling all around the country doing games than I am right now doing zero.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no excitement, right? To like, oh, I'm going to get to do this. It's just kind of like, mm-hmm. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. It's such a weird spot. Doing this interview right now, I was like, okay, 3:00. Meanwhile, my fucking kids wouldn't leave anyway. So I was just like.
Right. No, I'm wondering if you bought like a one-bedroom flat from Oliver's parents, since everybody seems to be in the same room.
I'm not at the Oliver house. I'm at the 20-year-ago beach house. I never got to use it up. I've used it up in the pandemic that I've made up for the years I didn't use.
Are you you working out at all, dude?
Yes, but eating so much. Didn't I send you that thing I was doing?
Yeah, I love that thing, by the
way.
Did
you do it at all?
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's good. It's really good.
It is. I did it. I just can't stop eating. I'm supposed to.
Did you do the hundreds? You get up to 200 push-ups?
I got
did you,
like, up actually make good. It? I didn't get up to 200 push-ups, but I got up to where I was doing push-ups. I was getting like 30 in a row. I got it.
Wow.
At the end of it, I was getting to like 150 push-ups.
Yeah, it's great.
But I don't go all the way down, man, because I'm always afraid I'm going to rip something. So I kind of cheat a little bit the whole time. You?
And then you're just eating everything.
I can't fucking stop eating. It's terrible. I looked disgusting. I had my shirt off today for most of the morning because I was too lazy to get to fucking go upstairs and put a shirt on. And I look fucking terrible. Terrible. My kids are like, Jesus Christ, what happened? My kids bring up the Zohan. They go, you know, remember the Zohan, what you look like in the Zohan? I'm like, yeah.
Oh.
You should do that again.
Rio, same thing. She goes, you have such a big belly. Like, when are you going to get like abs? I'm like, Jesus, I'm not. It's not going to happen. You know, but Zohan, you were fit, dude.
I was for about 5 months. I had it going.
Were you miserable?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I know it looks good, but weren't you just miserable?
I was. I don't know what it got me. It wasn't. My wife will fool around with me either way. So I'm like,
But that's a real thing. Like, I have a younger wife who is a Broncos cheerleader who is perfectly fit. And I'm like this 51-year-old balding hair plug, in my mind, fat guy. And I walk, it's all I think about every time. I like want to shower with my shirt on when she's in the bathroom.
Yo, man, I fucking swim in the ocean with the shirt on. I when I'm in a wetsuit, it is fucking horrific. nothing to cover. I got my fucking fat gut. My ass looks insane. My fucking bulge isn't big enough to enjoy.
Right. It's the only thing that's not big is the bulge, and that's what's...
that's the only place I stuffed. I put my t-shirt in put it in there in a wetsuit.
Oh,
that's a real thing, though. You don't care. You don't care about anything, Oliver, but I think about that all the time. I'm like, she's going to look at me and go, I look at her, and I'm inspired. She looks at me, she's like, what did I do?
Yeah, she knew what she was getting, though.
not as it progresses into worse and worse.
Yeah. You know, you look good for 50. I mean, yeah, come on.
For 53, I always say not bad for 53. And then I see other 53-year-old guys look fucking great. I'm like, that guy's fucking psychotic.
Yeah, but you're also having a way better life in terms of just not worrying about what you're eating and dieting and working out every second of the day. Those dudes are maniacal when it comes to that stuff. You know, that's a lifestyle that I don't want to sign up for anyway. Honestly, you know,
I know. When I read a script and it says that the guy's
shirt off or some shit.
Shirt off, or he's in shape, so he can. I'm like, oh man, this is just it really does kill you for 5-6 months. You got to change your body.
Yeah.
Well, Spade had his shirt off in The Wrong Missy. I was very proud of him for that.
Spade has it doesn't matter. He's got just a little gentle,
Well, he's a little boy body, no matter how old he is.
That's exactly what I was. He's got like a little boy body.
Yeah.
And I wish I had that.
He's got collarbones that still stick out and stuff.
Right. Totally. But I did notice that. I was watching with my wife, and that movie is funny front to back. Like, there's no gaps in that movie.
That's great, man. Yeah, it's pretty damn the lore.
And I know it's been successful, but it should be successful because it's really, really good.
That's good. My Jackie's in it. I got family members. I got my nephew, my brother-in-law, and my fucking nephew directed it.
Oh yeah, dude. When we watched it, it was just like, you know, it's going to like a Sandler family reunion, like on screen. It's great. Good.
They're all happy, and it is funny. And I'm very happy for Spade. I love when he is. Yeah. He's excited. He's just very excited.
I talked to him for me, and what do I know? And I said only a narcissist would text this to somebody, but because I'm sure he couldn't care less what I have to say about it. But there was a depth to that, and it was a moving kind of restrained. You know, he was the straight guy in this, and I was like, man, this is really you leave that movie really loving him.
You love him for knowing how great that girl is and how excited, fun.
Yeah, that he came around on her. She's unbelievable. I mean, whoever found, wow.
I did a movie with her. She was in Blended, and she did one day on Blended, and I remember just going, that fucking girl's funny, man.
Oh yeah,
she's just really cool. Funny. She's a champ.
Yeah. So Adam, would you consider yourself a good father?
I would.
Like, if you're looking in the mirror, you're like, I'm a good dad.
I think so. I think I definitely consider myself a good father as they've been growing up. And then last year or so, I start going, oh, man, they're getting older. I think I got to, like, give them the reins a little more, not be so involved and let them make their own decisions. But I have a hard time with that because I am just – always, you know, I give them shit about practicing guitar or piano. I'm a little fucking nutty with that. I got to calm down, but I don't know.
If you could, restrain from anything, like, what would you do? Like, it's a great point actually, because as they grow up, you're shifting and moving as far as being a dad goes or a parent goes. It's, you know, when they're this age, oh yeah, I got it. And then all of a sudden they're 10. You're like, oh shit, wait a minute. Okay. Now I got to sort of, you know, pivot a little bit here. You know, other times where you're just like, oh shit, maybe I didn't do that part right.
Maybe I was so involved that, like, when I would see other dads in situations not be so on it, I'd be like, what the fuck's he doing? Why is he doing? But then you see, those kids are like fending for themselves a little easier, and our kids are very close with us. And you're like, all right, you can get in there. You're allowed to get in that situation and feel comfortable. You know, we don't have to come in with you. You know, I guess you can overdo it too.
How do you do? What are the similarities that you know, like with your dad? How your dad raised you? And sort of the differences. Do you hear your father when you're talking?
I get like, I'm probably more goofy than my dad ever was, and allow myself to look goofy. But my father was always kind of strong and cool and just like steady. And my kids see me a little up and down more, and I think. I don't know. I do a lot of stuff. You know what? I got in there without, I don't ever, never done a physical thing ever, never will do a physical thing.
Yeah.
But I can definitely bring the fear.
The heat.
I can bring the heat, and where they just go, oh shit, we better listen right now because he's, you mean.
Well, you better. I mean, you better.
Good luck. Exactly me.
Right.
I would never touch my kids, but I can bring the heat for sure.
Yes, and I feel like shit after I bring it.
Yeah.
But on rare occasions, I go, they got to fucking know this one. It's crazy that they don't know this thing about the world or this rule or how disrespectful that was or. You know, I just go, what the fuck? You know, I get in there. I don't curse. On occasion, they do hear me curse, and I have cursed angry before, and I feel like an asshole when I do that. But I have even the different voice.
Yeah, Joe just brought the heat on his twins when they were coloring themselves with markers.
What?
No, I brought the heat on my wife. She's like,
you brought the heat on them though as well because they felt your heat.
Because the whole, you know, she's rationalizing with a 2-year-old as he's coloring on his leg with a marker. I'm like, she's going, no, Blake, we don't color on the leg. We color on the paper. I'm like, okay, notice that. Now, Blake, he's still doing it. Blake, we don't color on our leg. We color on the paper. I'm like, God, take the fucking marker away from him. Let's go. He doesn't know English. He wouldn't. What? Take it. Just say no and pull it out of his hand. There's no rationalizing with a 2-year-old.
That's amazing. That's snap-a-roo, baby. That's quick. Easy to snap on occasion. It does get it done really quick, man.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it works.
I'm not saying I'm perfect.
But it works for different kids. Like Wilder, when I got hot, he was like, oh, shit. With Bodie, my second, when he was 2, 3, 4, when I got hot, he just didn't give a shit about it. He was just like,
right, that's pretty funny.
You know? And so I was like, oh, I guess I can't use the same tactic with Bodie as I did with Wilder.
Oh, shit.
That's so
funny. When I brought the heat on my Sadie, she one time said to me, Daddy, this is after it happened. She goes, just so you know, when you yell like that, I don't hear anything you're saying because I'm scared. I go, oh, okay. She goes, yeah. She goes, yeah, right when you start, your eyes change, and I don't hear anything you're saying. And I go, oh, shit, I didn't know that. I thought because I kind of amplified. I'm like, you listen to me.
Yeah.
Like that. And I was like, this is changing the listening. And then to one of them was just like, yeah, I tune out because you're fucking insane right there.
That's so funny. I literally just had this moment with Wilder where I did the same thing. It was about some Zoom schoolwork that he wasn't doing, and I was giving him not a school lesson, but a life lesson about being a fucking accountable and responsible. And it's not about the work. It's about doing the work. It's about effort and bah, bah, bah. And I am just getting hot, and I am and he's not looking at me, and then I stopped. And I just decided to sort of do a social experiment and said, okay, wait a minute. Did you hear what I said? Wow. And he's like, yeah. And I said, no, I'm not mad anymore. Now I'm really just trying to figure out what's in your brain.
Wow.
Like, when I get like this, do you actually listen and do you take it in? And he goes, I don't know. Like, I mean, some words. Some words. I'm like, oh wow, so you just tune me out when I get like that, you know?
Yeah. I get it.
Now, this, just so you know, for history's sake, Adam, we've been on this podcast for a while now. This is the same kid that he told, listen, I really don't care if you actually read it, but just learn how to fake your way around.
I think there's value in learning how to get by.
Yes,
I really do.
Yes. To know one sentence of a topic so you can join in a conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I guarantee you we're three guys who bullshitted their way through class after class.
My point is that is part of education. I said to Wilder, I said, look, I don't care about your grade, really.
Yeah.
You know, I care about the effort that you put into it. And by the way, if you forgot to do your homework, right? Don't just say, oh, well, screw it, right? No, figure it out. And by the way, if that means calling a friend and copying the fucking homework, at least you're trying to figure it out and get it in on time. I would rather have that than a kid who's just like, eh, whatever, I'll just
apathetic is tough, man.
Right. So I'm not promoting cheating. I got expelled for cheating from high school.
Right.
But if just have the mindset to get it done, try to get it done.
Again, on this podcast, I feel the need now to say the disclaimer that we are not professionals in raising children, nor do we act as if we are professionals in raising children. Please take none of this advice into your own lives.
Okay, well, Sandman, like, I don't want to take more of your time, but this was awesome, dude.
Me too,
like,
buddy. I'm happy for you guys. This is a great thing. It is a great show.
It was so much fun. We ask one question to everyone at the end. Joe, why don't you ask it?
Okay.
Well, I mean, Oliver kind of touched on it earlier, but if there's one thing that you kind of took from your dad that you see now in yourself as a dad to your two girls, you know, what is it that you're glad you took from him, and what is it that you took from him that you wish maybe hadn't been passed on?
Oh, okay. That's good. Well, I know one thing that I felt about my dad that they feel about me is I'm always on their side, for sure. They feel that. No matter what was going wrong with me, if other kids didn't like me all of a sudden, I definitely felt like, well, this guy loves me. And I think my two kids got that for sure. They're like, you know, mommy and daddy, without a doubt, we would do anything for their happiness. Even when I act insane, they're like, in 30 seconds, he's going to be normal again. So I got that. And and something I got from my dad, too, that fucking hot moment of going bananas, I let it go pretty quick too. Pretty good. My father was always like that. I'd be like, holy shit, he's on a fucking tear right now. And then a minute later, he'd be laughing, being like, you see how quick you ran? You know, that kind of stuff. I'd be like, right. And he'll be turning into a joke. So I got that and shit. And I don't know what I don't think I took anything from him that I shouldn't have taken. One thing I wish I got was he was a little more patient than me. He was patient with me. I get a little with teaching and shit. I'm just like, let's go. What are we not? I told you got to do this, this, and this. Like with the guitar and stuff, I'm just like, I told you the pinky. Use the pinky. What are you using the third finger for? I said it four times already. And I said, my kid, like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Oh my god! I'm the same fucking way. It's so crazy.
I coached my kids in basketball, both girls in basketball, and they were like, "Why do you only yell at me, Dad?" I'm like, "Because I will get arrested if I yell at any one of your teammates. You belong to me, so I'm lighting you up so that the other kids see what you're supposed to be doing."
Yeah,
but that's
I'm the same way. I'm like, it's three times two. You know what three times two is? I don't get it. Just say it. Say it.
Yeah, you're Kinnison and back to school.
Oh, that's right.
I know. Have it three times two, and you see a delay, and just like, well, you gotta know that one.
It's all
you gotta know.
Totally.
That one. We don't know that one.
Totally.
We're big
totally. Totally. Oh God. I just want them all to not go to school. Like, I can't even deal with the stress that I'm feeling with all school shit.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I just want to say one thing before Oliver says goodbye, because you guys are long friends. But the one thing that comes through, Adam, in everything, not just the authenticity and who you are on screen or whether it's big screen, little screen, but the word loyal. Every bit of research we have on you, and when they go to quotes from anybody that's been in your life, the word loyal comes out. And now knowing your story, I feel like that comes from your mom and dad, and that comes from the sense of family, and you have the sense of family, and good for you, especially in the city where you are and the business that you're in. Loyalty is I would imagine a rare commodity. So it's been a pleasure watching you over these years, and I can't thank you enough for coming on.
I loved it. Thank you. I love your show, guys. I'm happy for both of you. This is a great thing. I hope everyone comes on and talks to you.
Thank you, brother.
All right, love you guys. All right.
Thank you.
All right, love you, Sandman. We'll see you later, brother.
Thanks, Adam.
Later, Joe. Thanks, guys.
All right, so that was the great, talented, effervescent, sexy Adam Sandler. And as we go forward in life, those of us at Daddy Issues, that means Oliver and me and our entire production crew, we're going to give you a phone number. Mm-hmm. It's our Daddy Issues voicemail.
I'm excited about this.
So we're going to throw a voicemail number out there, and you can leave us voicemail, and we will answer voicemail, and we will play some of the voicemail. The number, here it is. Get out your pen. Lick the end of it like Letterman used to do, although it was a pencil. 314-314. So this is in St. Louis. This could be my number. 314-390-9094. That's 314.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. That's Michelle's number. That's Michelle's number.
She's got Joe issues. 314-390-9094. And our Daddy Issues email is daddyissuespodcast1@gmail.com. Hit us up. Tell us we suck. Tell us you love it. Ask us questions. Tell us that you're a normal dad or a struggling dad, and we will talk about it and talk about you in upcoming episodes.
We'll talk about it, talk about it, talk about it, talk about it.
314-390-9094, Daddy Issues Podcast 1 at gmail.com. That's the number. That's the email.
And that's all, folks.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.